For April the 29th, 2022, we talk about Life is Strange 2, Saviorless, Plunder, and more. Welcome to Level 412. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jella.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going just fine. What you been up to?
Making a podcast, and I don't mean this one.
Nice. Yeah, you mentioned this obliquely last time you were on. What's happening?
You know how you can find me on the internet at Jollachon in places?
Yes.
Well, you can now find me at jollachon.com. Okay. And also, that has links to the various things that I do, or at least a large chunk of them. Mm-hmm. It's got a link to my art thing and my fitness thing. And also, it is the landing page of my new podcast, Jollachon's Place, because you can find me in the place.
Yes.
So... this podcast is basically going to be stuff that I can't shoehorn into this podcast or any other ones that I appear on, as well as various other topics that are important to me. So I'll also have interviews with different folks who make stuff or are just really neat that I want to give a platform to in order to let them talk about what's important to them. So like, for example, the first real episode, okay, the episode that comes out this weekend is going to be just an introduction that's just going to be me telling you what we're doing and what you can expect out of the show. The next episode after that, it will be released bi-weekly, so a couple of weeks after that, will be an episode discussing the live-action Ace Attorney movie, because I can't shoehorn that in anywhere. And Cole, beyond that, I cannot talk about that on this show exactly. I mean, not in detail anyway.
Right, right.
And I can't talk about it on Monster Dear Monster. There's no monsters in there.
The Japanese legal system.
You have to, okay, that's like real stretching going on there. Anyhow, so we're going to talk about that as one of the first things. And there will be lots of other discussion about various topics. And I have some interviews lined up and everything. So it's going to be fun.
Nice.
So, well, yeah.
I wish you the best of luck. And now that you're a competitor, you can't come on the show anymore. So
no,
you've made
it is not even a competition, but this is this is like the kind of people who will want to listen to this are going to be real specific, because it's like a, you know, such a broad range of topics I'm going to be covering
on the
show. I mean, there's going to be a lot of game talk and movie talk and stuff like that, but lots of other things as well that are interesting. It's basically going to be like, you know, the Jala special. That's why it's the Jollachon's Place, because it's going to be stuff that's interesting or important to me that I'm sharing, and also lots of neat people that I want to give a platform to and let them talk about their things. Yeah. So,
well, of course I'm being facetious. You'll always have a place here.
I know.
But
well, I need to talk to you and Jeremy about coming on for that long-awaited house repair episode that everybody wants.
Yeah,
I want you and Jeremy on to talk about that with me, because that's a thing that we all have in common.
we could do that, and we can see. So you're in Texas, Jeremy's in Louisiana, I'm in Ohio. We can see if we can hear Gary's head pop from here.
Right, exactly.
Just reverberating across the Rockies.
So anyway, that's what's going on with me. What about everybody else?
I am still feeling a sugar high from all the cake I had at my kid's birthday party this weekend. So this is like, he's in kindergarten. It's my middle kid, and the older one, you know, their kindergarten birthday was during the pandemic, or during lockdown, I should say. This is like the first big class birthday party that happened. And so they took home a mountain of presents that we are still opening whatever, 4 days later. He was a very happy camper. It was a good time. It was a beautiful weekend for us. But yeah, we got Costco cake, which anyone who doesn't belong to Costco or hasn't tried it, like, Costco sheet cake is the tastiest thing in the world.
Do they do a buttercream frosting, or do they do the mm-hmm, one that tastes mm-hmm. like foam? Okay.
And like a really good filling, like a custardy filling.
Okay.
Ooh. But what turns it into real crack cocaine is you take the slices, you put them in Saran wrap, and then you stick them in the freezer. Mm. And so for days after, you pull out freezer cake, which is the highest form of cake. If you haven't tried freezer cake, I insist. Yeah. Specifically with Costco sheet cake, it will change your life, and quite possibly give you diabetes.
I regret nothing. If you eat a Costco sheet cake while you're watching Kramer versus Kramer, is that a custardy battle?
No, that's a food fight with Costco cake.
Okay. All right. Moving on.
Yeah. So yeah, that is my weekend, and some fun stuff came out of that party and nice. That birthday.
Well, happy birthday to the middle one. That's good that he got buried with presents, and I hope he shares. Hope he shares with the others.
Yeah, he's doing a surprisingly good job. Milo has a kind heart and is a good sharer.
So. Oh, that's good.
Aw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Ben?
Not too much. Over the weekend, I went to a Seattle subreddit / Discord meetup.
Okay.
And so that was in like, excuse me, I'm getting worked up just thinking about it. We went to a park and it was just like a lot of internet people. So it was like, you know, like kind of like similar crowd to like probably people who listen to this. It was like nerdy, kind of introverted, but friendly people. Mm-hmm. We tossed a frisbee around. We played hacky sack. I was sore in muscles I didn't know I had from doing that. And then in a slight bittersweet news this morning on the subreddit, I found out that somebody who was at the event tested positive for COVID.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I tested myself and I tested negative, so I'm feeling okay. And most of the people are saying that they're testing negative, so might have been that they just got it afterwards. But
yeah, what was this? This was outdoors, right?
Yeah. Okay. So we were in a park, so everyone was kind of spaced apart and stuff.
And
but
this was a Seattle Discord, or what was the theme of the Discord that met?
This part's weird. So it's from the Seattle subreddit, but then it's also a Discord channel where everyone like communicates and talks and stuff. And they have somehow divorced themselves from the Seattle subreddit, and they claim that the people of the Seattle subreddit are weird. And so I don't understand it, but it makes perfect sense, if that makes sense. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know.
But, factions and infighting on a Reddit-related thing? No, exactly.
On an internet community-related thing?
Yeah.
Internet beef. But no, it's cool. I haven't gone to many meetups lately, you know, since the mm-hmm. pandemic and everything. So it's nice to like go and meet new people and like have to re-exercise social skills and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Nice.
Just be very careful about going to that Discord meetup for the Axe Murderer Discord.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Unless you're a mod, you're not too safe in that one. So.
Gotta have access to the secret channels. Oh, man. Yeah. No, and I my whole past week has kind of been going in and out of a relative's house. Keeping an eye on someone. So, someone who could use a little bit of help around the house. So that has been good getting to spend quality time with a family member. And, boy, I'm happy to be back home. Man, I am way too acclimated to sleeping on my own bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just got it. Just a very little can or should replace a nice long night of sleep in your own bed.
Mm-hmm. What's your pillow policy? You multiple pillow guy? Just got one? What are you doing over there?
I'm a maniac with pillows. I sleep on my stomach with two pillows.
Whoa!
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
going nuts.
Two pillows are under your stomach or they're by your head?
No, they're up under my head. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't have neck problems because I sleep with my arms kind of like clasped around them, like holding on to it like it's a life preserver, you know.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, for dear life. So yeah, that's my pillow policy. It's always disappointing when you go to a place, a hotel with bad pillows, with flat ones, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, agree. Yeah. I've got one of those side sleeper pillows that's like an L, and so sleeping anywhere but my own bed without that pillow, just like no matter how nice the pillows are, it's not what I'm used to. So
yeah,
I feel mm-hmm. your pain on that.
Yeah. So I just looking forward to that. Happy to be back home with the kitties. Came home today they had knocked over their little water fountain thing. So that water had been sitting on my laminate flooring for a while, which pretty sure voids the warranty. So,
oops.
Oh, well.
That's how they show affection, by ruining your house.
Well, I got a little this was a couple weeks ago. I got an area rug for this office because the old one was kind of coming apart. I just kind of cheaped out on it. I had a cheap backing. But I just put down this nice area rug with a nice sturdy rubber backing, you know, so it wouldn't slide around, and I'm real happy with it. It's dark blue. It's got a nice pattern. And then Dottie, my littlest cat, walks in, just like walks right up to it, looks up at me, and
yeah.
just right on it. It's like,
welcome home, motherfucker.
Yeah, mark these territory.
It was the same day that I got the damn thing. So good form, Dottie. I hats off to you, girl. I think we should do a regular kind of show. How's that sound?
Sure.
Yeah. Sounds like buttons.
No. You don't say buttons yet. I say what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. So I'm going to go first. My thing is story driven, so it's going to be hard to, I'm probably not going to go too long with it because it's hard to talk about it without spoiling it. Apologies. Because I had been spending a lot of time away from the house, I wasn't around my usual stuff. And so I took my little, a controller dingus that holds my phone, that Backbone One, thing to try streaming from my computer that's in my house over the internet across town to my family member's house, just while I was in bed and stuff, or, you know, while the person I was watching was asleep. And that worked really well, by the way, like miraculous technology using Steam Link on that. Over the past week, I have played and beat Life is Strange 2.
Cool. Oh, cool.
Yeah. No, I'd been just curious about this. Remember back during Christmas break, I had played Life is Strange Before the Storm.
Mm-hmm.
And played and enjoyed that. And I really knew nothing about the sequel other than it followed different people. Didn't follow Max and Chloe. I knew it followed two brothers. And though the start of it was pretty, you know, a little bit iffy, it ended up winning me over. I just finished it today. In fact, I like put off other stuff so I could finish it in time to talk, even though I'm not going to be sharing any late game story details, you know. So Life is Strange, it's a cinematic narrative adventure game. You know, think Until Dawn, Telltale kind of stuff. You know, The Walking Dead, etc. The first one concerned a young woman who discovers through a trauma that she has the ability to turn back time. Basically, she has a superpower, so she can rewind time, and she is helping her friend figure out what happened to her, possibly, depending on the choices you make in Life is Strange, her girlfriend who has gone missing. And you know, it's a whole dramatic story around that, like teenage soap opera combined with superhero power kind of things. This one is about two Mexican-American brothers who end up through a traumatic incident, again, trauma unlocking powers like in the X-Men and what have you, discovering that the younger one, who's about nine, his name is Daniel. He has telekinetic abilities. He can like lift stuff up and move it with his mind. And you are playing as the older brother, Sean, as, both of you, you have to leave home and you're running from the law and you are trying to get to Mexico, you know, to shake off the tail of, you know, the federal police who are coming to get you for, again, that inciting incident that happens there. So like comparing and contrasting, Life is Strange 1, Ben, you've played that, right?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Life is Strange 1 takes place primarily in and around a, like a boarding school kind of place, like a talented and gifted, high school for the arts and stuff.
And it's like Pacific Northwest too, right? Like
yes.
Oregon-y, Washington-y. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A little Twin Peaks-y in a lot of its, kind of trappings, you know, small town life kind of stuff. That one you spend a lot of time that was released episodically. Each episode are kind of around the same people. So you're developing these same characters kind of around the developing relationship between Max and Chloe, as you try and unravel this mystery. In contrast to that, because you're on the run from the law, every chapter in Life is Strange 2, as you're headed from Seattle, where the game starts, down to the border, takes place in a different location with primarily a different cast of people that the brothers run into. So that was a thing that initially kind of put me off, was like, okay, some of these teens in the first one are kind of shitty, but I know that they're going to find a way to subvert your expectations and make them endearing. And ultimately for a lot of them, they did. In this one, it's a real, like, you're going to get to know some of these folks for about 3 hours and then, you know, the heat's going to come and the brother's going to have to move on. And I think that maybe there were just a couple of missteps in the first episode specifically that made me wonder, like, okay, are we going to get any like real time, you know, kind of seeing the brothers interact with different people, you know? By the time they hit like the late second and definitely the third episode is amazing. They kind of hit their stride from like a storytelling point of view, where each chapter kind of felt like it had its own kind of its own thing after it had set up the premises and the rules and stuff. So that was cool.
I have a question.
Okay.
So I know in the OG Life is Strange, like the character would kind of have a different take on the power, or like would kind of change in context, like for each chapter. It'd basically be like a new power for that chapter, and then it would kind of go away. Is there something similar here, or is it the same sort of like telekinetic ability all the way through?
So as things, as events progress, Sean trains Daniel to be able to use the powers with more control, you know? Okay. So he just ends up being able to do things more intentionally. Ends up being able to do like really impressive stuff with it. Also the first game took place over the course of like 7 days. This one takes place over, months. It goes from like late summer of 1 year to like early summer of the next year.
Okay.
Yeah. Something that does end up changing is, so in the first game, you play the person with the powers yourself. You know, you can turn back time, and that makes sense for that power because, you know, if somebody else was turning back time, how would you perceive that? You know, that doesn't make any sense. But because it's your little brother who has just recently been ripped away from his home and his family, and he discovered that he has this power that goes off when he's angry, the choices that you end up making as your brother, both in like the behavior that you model for him, and like how you respond to the things that he does, helps determine, the decisions that he is going to make that you do not have direct control over. Oftentimes related to like how flippantly does he decide to use his powers, or, you know, just like broadly, like we're on the run from a law. What do we compromise of ourselves to survive? Right. So, you know, basically, if we can commit justify committing crimes in one context, will he understand that he shouldn't do the same for like petty or selfish reasons as it goes? And I think that's a super interesting take on this decision-based gameplay kind of deal. Obviously, there are places where the choices are going to bottleneck. You know, there's some things that are going to need to happen as dramatic incident to kind of like usher you along to the next act, to the next chapter. But as with any of these games, you know, even though there are those bottlenecks, the primary difference is expression, right? And even mm-hmm. though you might not be able to change the broad strokes of where the story is going to go, your Daniel is your Daniel. You taught him, you know, not to steal, or you taught him to, you know, not use the power to mess around with animals or stuff like that. And I think that's pretty cool. And it ties into bigger stuff. Like it ties into bigger decision points or like how certain things turn out.
It sounds
this very is feeling too close to raising an actual child where everything you do, you see show up later in their actions.
What were you going to say, Ben?
Yeah, it sounds really reminiscent of Walking Dead, like the first series of it.
Yeah, yeah, with Clem.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really neat. It's a neat system, and I think they end up using it to tell a pretty good story. Like what you said there, Dennis. You just like okay, it's like raising a kid. You know, you're not around your birth family, aside from you and, you know, you as the brother sticking with your little brother at all costs. But like when the game started settling into, when the game started hitting for me, is when it started really like looking at kind of the theme of found families along the way kind of deal. Which is like you meet people on the road, some of which are monsters and some of which are racist toward you because, you know, you are Mexican American, children. But you also meet like really helpful people who invite you in and help take care of you and stuff like that. And just the ways that those dynamics work and how they're informed by like what drove people away from their given home to find a chosen home, you know, and how that affects the dynamic is a really neat way that the story kind of plays out. And some of those found families fall apart due to the, due to some of the choices. It's, you know, you are a destructive force that is going through, but you have to figure out how to minimize that.
And I'm guessing it's engineered so that you're going to have to alienate someone.
Like yeah.
There's no, yeah. We kept everyone together and nothing went bad.
Right. Right. That's there can't be a happy ending for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that might be all that I have to say without spoiling things. You know, I know that's, I know it's weird to be coy about it because it is a relatively, it's like a 5-year-old game now, I think, something like that. But,
but when the story is that central to the game,
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I understand it.
I guess I should say like the story is not, directly related to the original Life is Strange. It's more of like a tangential kind of thing to the point where it's weird that they call it Life is Strange 2, because that kind of implies that it would be picking up with Max and Chloe. This is only tangentially, related. So, you know, elements and stuff do pop up, but like they're kind of establishing this, and I'm really curious to see where it goes with True Colors. With Life is Strange 3, if they, you know, if this is really going to be just a series of extremely loosely connected, like anthology stories about kind of people on the outskirts, being able to grow up and in safety, developing these powers and trying to figure out a way to get along with them. I have no idea of like if the third one's going to come in and like put a bow on anything. Right.
So are you going to go on to the third one then after this?
I think so. I don't know. It depends. I've got a lot of homework to do. It may be back into the deadline mines for a while. I'm curious. I'm definitely curious, and I can polish off a series, and that always feels good.
Yeah. It is nice. Like, the one advantage of it being like very like entheologic, is that what is the word? Is like they can do whatever they want with the storyline, right? They can actually have like definitive endings for their characters. Because I know like in the first game, like there's definitely some very substantial endings for some of the characters.
So, yeah.
That would be restricted if they would have to do the second one,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm sure, I mean, at a certain point, it will just feel weird if everything gets tied together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and there are some things that it'd be like, huh, I wonder how they would work that in. But then again, mm-hmm. there was stuff from one that was surprising to me that popped up in two, given how far flung things are. So who knows? I don't know. I just I've got goodwill towards this series, and it's nice from the perspective of having kind of a bit of a low effort thing to play. Honestly, it worked playing that over Steam Link because it doesn't require like split second reflexes, you know, mm-hmm. The accessibility options are real good. And there should be no more button mashing in games. Every game should have the option to make it so you just hold the button whenever one of those comes up, please and thank you.
Yes. That was one of my favorite things about The Last of Us 2 from a interface standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't, that is not a physical requirement for me. However, it is still really nice to have.
How do you feel about a button mashing segment where it actually doesn't matter like how much you press it, but it just presents itself as if you need to press stuff a whole bunch, but then basically everyone passes it?
Wait, Hideo Kojima? What?
Yeah.
Wait a minute, Ben, did you design Metal Gear Solid 4?
No.
Oh, man. So, any other questions about Life is Strange 2?
Yeah, it makes me want to play it. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. It's short. It's, I don't know. I think all in, it was like 14 hours, something like that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, and I streamed some stuff, but it was all really slight, so I think I'm going to cede the floor to whoever wants to go next. Jala, you weren't here last time, so I'll go to you.
Okay. Everyone will be happy to know I don't have as much to say today as I did the last time I was on.
Aww.
But I do want to cover some things.
You do. You just have a separate podcast for some of it now.
I know. It's now overflowing into a completely different show. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, the first thing that I will mention is I'm excited to announce a few updates to Savior Lists, developed by Empty Head Games in Cuba. This is the first indie game made by folks over in Cuba. So I've talked about this game a few times over the past several years when they worked on developing it. And then due to the closure of Cuba and the leaving of the programmer and then having to find a new programmer and all of that, like it's been, you know, having a lot of challenges to face over the years. Anyhow, they just released a new beta demo that is available on the Steam page. I streamed both the alpha and beta demos recently, and they're archived on YouTube at Jalachan. Each one is about 20 minutes long. The alpha trailer was available only to backers of the crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo 50 million years ago. So I have something special, and I shared that, though. So you can watch me die several times in both of them, because it's been very, very busy in my personal life, and I have been completely overstretched. So I was a little scattered both times I was trying to do the thing. But I did it, and you can watch me with the kill count. I think I need, if I start streaming again for any like real amount of time, I'm going to need a kill counter, and I'm going to have to figure out how to make that widget happen.
I can send you a link to that, because I did that with when I was streaming old Souls games. I had one of those for a while.
Okay. Well, I mean, just because like in general, I die a lot in games because I don't, a lot of times, especially if I'm streaming, I'm not focusing on the game. So I play it so much better if I'm just left alone to just look at the screen. But if I'm paying attention to chat and also trying to talk about the game and then do the game, like that's splitting my attention up in a bunch of ways. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that has nothing to do with Savior List. Let me tell you about Savior List. So I definitely recommend that everybody check it out on Steam, play the demo that's there. They also just announced today on their Discord that they're partnering with Plug-In Digital Publishing, which secures a Switch version of the game initially, with possibly other ports to other consoles in the future. Of course, it's going to be on Steam as well. So that's very exciting. This also means that the development will speed up because they did find a new programmer and they've been working on the game ever since. So they're looking right now at maybe an early 2023 release, but as everyone knows, who's ever anticipated a game, the development process is a hairy business. So, you know, it will be, a tricky thing. But that is the tentative release date that they're looking at this time. And I'm super jazzed about that. Also, I've secured an interview with the devs at some point on my podcast. Whenever that's going to be probably closer towards summer. And I don't know if that's going to take the form of them coming on the show or if I'm going to send them interview questions and then have like a little discussion about it on the air with a co-host or something. But either way, there will be further information on that at my.com in the future. So I don't really want to spoil it, but some of the people who are watching it compared it to Hollow Knight in kind of a Soulsy vibe. It's a dark fantasy action platformer, side-scrolling action platformer.
Cool.
With hand-drawn graphics that are absolutely gorgeous, and everything is really smooth and really great in the little bit that I've been able to play. Like, I've been wanting this game to just come out already for so long, although it's, you know, how it just takes so much time to do and to do well. And they're taking their time until they have a polished product. So I'm okay waiting for that.
Yeah, it's for the better.
Yeah. So any questions about Saviorless?
No, I'm curious to hear more. I'm always excited to hear about games from not America, Japan, or Europe.
Yeah.
I guess Western Europe, I suppose, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm super excited about that. So I will give a quick touch on Fire Emblem Echoes. I finished Act 4 completely.
Cool.
Hooray. That's all I have to say about that. That's I finished Act 4. I burrowed through all the rest of that and knocked out the rest of Act 4. I still have Act 5, and then there's a bonus post-game dungeon at the end of that, and then I will be done with that game. So still some stuff to do, but, you know. In Fire Emblem Heroes, I continue to play a bunch of new modes. I have been doing a lot of new stuff that came up for Golden Week that I've been having a lot of fun with. So anyhow, that's all I have to say about Fire Emblem Heroes for the time being. So I can move on to the last thing I have to talk about.
Okay.
Fire Emblem speedrun right there.
I know it is a Fire Emblem speedrun. For a minute I thought you were about to tell me, like, which Fire Emblem did you play other than that, John? Because you've been playing nothing but Fire Emblem for the last several months. No, the last thing I have to talk about is Tomodachi Life. So this was a 3DS game that was released in North America in 2014. It's the sequel to the Japan exclusive DS title Tomodachi Collection. So this was the 11th best-selling 3DS game of all time, which is wacky because I had never heard of it until I started looking around for, like, Mii stuff again because I had enjoyed Miitopia.
Yeah.
So it's a Sims-like game where you have an island with a bunch of Miis on it that you can design, and you give personalities to them and you can name them, and they interact and have a bunch of mundane problems that need to be solved, and you're the one to solve them.
Of course.
You can adjust not just their appearance, but also how fast or slow they move, what their voice sounds like, and all the different aspects of their personality via a whole series of sliders. And what's nuts is that when I was working the sliders to make a few folks, the personalities that they came up with, because they give you like three personality traits on the screen when you're done with all of that, the personality traits that came up ended up being spot on to the actual people.
Oh.
By their own admission, when I sent it to them and said, "This is what your me is like." And they're like, "Yeah, that tracks.
That's fair."
And I'm like, none of them
challenged you to a fight.
No. Although, Cole, you are also in my little island so far. I have not made everybody yet. Cole is just like very easy to make in me format.
Yeah. I'm a cartoon character.
Well, you are easy to turn into a little me. So yeah. You can watch the rap battle where Cole, who is taller than everybody else,
I've seen
is sitting there in the background while I'm rapping. And then also there's like a metal concert that I did. I took a little couple of videos. Those are on my Twitter. So you can find that at Jolichon hashtag Tomodachi Life. So anyway, like they are just nonsense. Other stuff about Tomodachi Life. There is a stage based on it, apparently, in the Super Smash Brothers for 3DS and in Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. And, you know, its DNA, you obviously, it can be found in things like Miitomo, that little short-lived phone game that they had for a while.
The market research app that people installed.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, and Miitopia, of course, as well as Animal Crossing, of course, island. People messing around with little, you know, problems that they have and whatnot. Here's the funny thing. I do have a cute story about this. I got a used physical copy off eBay and it had somebody else's island on it
because
they didn't delete it before they sent it. Ooh. So I had to figure out how to delete it. So I had to Google that. And then when I went into the town hall in the game to delete everything, the prior owner's me protested and said, "You're not really going to delete me, are you? I don't want to be deleted."
No.
And then when I still deleted it, it said, "I hope we meet again someday," which sounds real serial killer to me. I was like, "I think it's going to come murder me in my sleep. It's going to just find me and come back and kill me, I think is what's going to happen."
Mr. Rossetti from Animal Crossing pops in with two grenades in his hand, in both of his hands. No pins in sight. Yeah.
So I have set the game down for a little bit since then, because I've been trying to play the Fire Emblem Echoes and finish that. But that's a little bit about Tomodachi Life. And it seems like it's one of those, it's obviously a never ending game that just kind of goes on repeat until you get sick of it. So it does have little events that happen that are scheduled to occur every day, and like different things will happen throughout the day. So, you know, like there's different stuff that you can watch, but there's obviously going to be a finite amount of different events and everything. I will probably come back to the show and talk about it a little bit more at a later date, just because it'll have some cute, weird thing that's happening. And I'm just going to have to talk about it and share it because it's silly, just like with Miitopia.
Nice.
So that's it. That's all I got.
I guess my question is it really okay? Does it give you goals to work towards? Like, are there individual skills for the different Miis that you have?
They have levels associated with them, and that like unlocks different stuff that you can get for them. You can change their house and do other different stuff with them, and they have jobs. Like, I went to your apartment in the little apartment complex, and you were at your part-time job somewhere. And okay. I tried to find out where you were working so I could come and say hi, but I never found you. You disappeared off the island for your part-time job, apparently. So,
yeah. Yeah, that was my only question. From everything that I had seen, you know, people sharing things, it mostly appeared to be concerts, you know, which is,
yeah, I mean, yeah. Like there's concerts, there's other little things. There's like a little farmer's market you can go to randomly. You can give them different outfits and stuff, but it's like, it's not going to be something that, unless you are a very small kid and find it super charming, no matter how many times it shows up on the screen, like you're not going to be engaging with this for hours and hours.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I will say that my me is running around in a hula skirt, and I gave her a hula video and she was very happy. And as a side note, I actually have done some Hawaiian dance via video that I randomly picked up at some point or other. So that is actually a thing that I have done in my life.
Nice.
Did those skills transfer over to your digital version somehow? the way it can guess people's personalities.
I haven't seen the concert yet, so I'll let you know when that occurs, when the dance performance happens.
Nice.
I can see you coming back enraged. I'm a way better dancer than that. What is going on?
So that's all I've got.
Cool.
Somebody else. Ben, Dennis, someone.
You said Ben
I'll
first.
I'll go because I only have one tiny thing. I played Terraria last week with some friends.
Okay.
This is an old ass game. Has anyone played it here? I don't know if we've ever talked about it.
I've only ever fucked around with it. The closest thing that I played was Starbound, but that game kind of fell apart in development.
Okay.
But similar deal, kind of a 2D Minecraft.
Exactly. Yeah. 2D Minecraft's a good way to describe it. It also came out around the same time as Minecraft because they both reference one another in their menus originally, saying that this other one's a good game, you should check it out. But essentially it's similar to Valheim, even though Valheim came out afterwards. There's different biomes, it's a randomly generated world. Since it's 2D instead of 3D, instead of exploring it, you know, like by exploring like the area and, you know, like if a forest or something like that, you're digging down to explore the area. Mm-hmm. There's different monsters that you come across. It's kind of like maybe like Spelunky in that sense, where you're digging holes, you're creating ropes so you can get back up. And then there's like traps and stuff when you go down. It's a lot. It is a lot. It's very helpful to play with people who've played it before, because there are a lot of questions, and that's similar to Valheim as well, where it doesn't really state all the rules up front. It kind of is hoping that you figure them out, or they have like a pretty expansive wiki that you can go to. So that's just what it is, I guess. Like some games are like that, I guess.
I think it's the nature of like the continuous release game where, I mean, Terraria was playable in a very simple form, and then they have built on it and built on it and built on it over. You said it, you know, it came out around the same time as Minecraft, so it has increased at least as much in complexity.
I was gonna make that point as well. Yeah, where it's like you're seeing this end product, but it's gone over so many iterations that it's hard to tell, like, okay, what was the base game and what's being added on?
Yeah.
You get a few options when you generate the world where it's like there's blight and some a curse or something like that that you can either force on or you can make it random whether it's there or not. And that's things that will affect the world over time. But otherwise it's like a similar grind as Valheim. It's like you're mining for resources, use the resources to upgrade your armor and weapons, use that to kill things more efficiently. There's bosses. A lot of it, I'm just finding out from like hearing other people talk about it. We're just trying a simple run through of it for the first time. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know. It doesn't, you know, maybe I'm like a superficial gamer in a sense where it's like the graphics aren't as like stunning or pretty as Valheim. So that's not really keeping me. But they do have like an interesting like building system and crafting system. Like the idea is you build a base and you build rooms in your base and people will automatically spawn and come live in your house over time. And then you can like sell things to them and buy things from them. And that's kind of how you unlock new tech and new abilities.
Yeah. You know, whenever I have guests over, my favorite part is selling things to them.
Would you like this Milo's birthday present? Or
yeah, I think Terraria is an MLM.
I think I would have a hard time if I was coming in without having other people who haven't played it before.
Yeah.
Like, so for example, the guys I was playing with is like, here's a spear, use this. And it was like, oh, okay, I can actually kill things now. This is great.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's, you know, the procedural generated part of it's interesting. Different strategies for how you dig is interesting. Like instead of doing like the rope system, you could just build this giant staircase that goes at a 45 degree angle, like down into the abyss. There's like fluid dynamics there too. So like, it kind of has like a similarity to Noida, that one like pixel game.
Yeah.
It's like everything's kind of reactive. It's interesting. I don't know. Old ass game.
Yeah.
We'll see if it goes anywhere. Might not, but who knows.
to the point of like, you know, it's like, oh, I might be a superficial gamer or whatever. Like if a game is at least partially about exploration or even about like making a base, if you're not interested in seeing what the next thing is because it might not look cool, you know, to your eye.
Sure.
And if the, you know, the things you are making are going to look like piles of blocks, I could see it being very hard to have the motivation, you know, or you know, not very hard, harder than in something like Valheim, which is quite pretty, you know? So, I don't think that's like, unreasonable. Yeah.
Similar to Valheim, like kind of the sticking point is like, you don't exactly know what you're supposed to do. And like, they don't really communicate like, oh, the next like thing you need to focus on is like get this type of weapon or like go for this type of armor. They don't really explicitly tell you that. And so, and it's similar in Valheim too. Like you unlock a new region and you kind of learn over time, like, okay, the way to get to the boss is somewhere in this region. So I'm going to look for that. But it is kind of like, if you do it on your own and don't like have anyone to kind of guide you, it does take a little bit more time. So
yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
It's also very, very prone to bottlenecks that when you realize the next thing you should do, you haven't like progressed towards it and you have a significant amount of grinding just to catch up.
Yeah. So it's like, obviously there's trade-offs because like you don't want a game to just explicitly tell you every time like, hey, go here, hey, go here, hey, go here. So like, I appreciate the idea of like having exploration be part of the gameplay. But at the same time, if like nothing is communicated to you at all, then that's kind of rough as well, because it feels a little bit like unfulfilling to like, okay, let's go to the wiki and see what I have to do. And then instead of the game telling you this, like you're going somewhere else to tell you, that's like a little unsatisfying. So I don't know.
Yeah. You need a sense of, I need something like, you know, X, Y, Z without being directed to exactly what that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. I don't want to spend too much time talking about it because it's an old ass game, so it's not 100% relevant right now. So, yeah.
Cool. Dennis, round us up.
Yeah. I've got two new games, one video and one board.
All right.
So, you know, I mentioned that Milo took home quite the haul. One of the presents, and this one was specifically from me and Jen, was new Super Mario Bros. Deluxe.
Oh yeah, that game's fun.
I guess it was originally a Wii U game, and this is like the Switch update of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in the vein of the, you know, 2D Mario games that hue in vibe very close to the originals while updating the graphics and all that.
Adding co-op.
Adding co-op, drop-in, drop-out co-op. You know, 2-player up through 4-player co-op. We have not been brave enough to try to play with our kids because the last version of the game was like New Super Mario Bros. Wii. I think Jen and I played together pretty extensively, and that was a very difficult game.
Yes.
Specifically, it was more difficult co-op, I think, than it was playing single player, because there's collision on your characters, which does enable you to do some like tricky double jump stuff to get you up to places you maybe shouldn't be. But generally you can, you know, find a power up to get you there anyway in single player mode. And the ratio of times where double, you know, jumping off of another player was helpful versus just served to knock you into a pit or send someone flying in a direction they didn't mean to, was very high.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the kids have played it single player, and I think there's a character called Nabbit in it that you can choose that's like kind of easy mode for the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they play with that. And then I've been playing mostly solo and then a little bit of co-op with Jen, on two separate saves. And yeah, really fun game. And, you know, I think a little bit it is, it feels like they haven't fussed with the formula very much.
Yeah.
But also it's a really freaking good formula, you know?
Yeah. I mean, all they really have to do is give you like some really well-designed stages, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. Not a lot of people played that game, kind of like Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 3D World, right? Just because it was on Wii U and nobody owned that system at all.
Yeah.
Like, give us good 2D Mario levels and maybe a new power up or two, and it's kind of hard to go wrong with that. You might be up for one every year, but it's real nice when one's waiting for you.
Exactly. So I've been having lots of fun with that. There's stuff in this game, as well with carrying around baby Yoshis. that I haven't quite figured out yet. So basically you, you know, you're unlocking stages on a map as you go, and there will be little side things that, you know, some of them are just little mushroom huts that are mini games that you can get power-ups from. And then a couple times now I've seen a baby Yoshi, and you walk up to it. It's not even a level. The baby Yoshi just starts following you. And then you can take the Yoshi into a level with you. Mm-hmm. And this is different than like a Yoshi that you can ride and jump on, et cetera. These are little guys that you have to carry, but they each do something unique when you use the right bumper. So I've had one that glows and lights up a dark level. I had one that blows bubbles that you can then jump on. And then I forget what the other one did, but it's all like really, you know, interesting additions to the gameplay at the expense of you kind of have to manage carrying another creature through the game with you.
Yeah.
And you know, if you set them down or accidentally drop them, they'll just kind of start wandering off like Yoshis do, and it's very easy to lose them. And the crazy thing is that for the ones that you find on the map, they don't come back. Like once it's gone, I never saw it again.
Yeah.
Once I lost it, and I have yet to actually like fully finish a level with it. So I'm curious if you'll get to a point where you can kind of spawn them in, or you can refresh them, mm-hmm. Or if those are like just really truly like these one time use kind of Yoshis that, you know, once they're gone, they're gone.
I mean,
which of course just makes you super paranoid about like, what can I get into here that I'm not supposed to?
Yoshis have always been disposable.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. But now they are non-renewable.
Wow.
So I like to think that Yoshis are a recycle versus a landfill. But I'm sending Yoshis to the landfill in this game, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's I can never get all the adjectives in the right order. New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe Switch Edition, something like that.
Yeah. So they still kept the U in the title, even though it's on the Switch.
Yep.
You know what? They are shameless about that. Yes. So, but you know, they do have Switch controllers on either side of Deluxe, so it's very clear that this is next gen experience.
Yeah.
No gimmicky uses for the Switch Joy-Cons, by the way. Everything's been very straightforward.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, especially given that it's this Wii U port. How ripped off would you feel if you got this game for the Wii U and then realized, oh, it uses the touchscreen? Not at all.
Yeah.
So odd. Maybe I just haven't gotten to that part yet or whatever. But
yeah, I can't remember if it does any weird or bad stuff with touchscreen stuff. I mean, I would have been like the Super Mario 3D World didn't do anything with the touchscreen, and I was overjoyed. I didn't care for the touchscreen outside of playing games in bed occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is, and you know that I feel like that's kind of what they figured out with the Wii U, and then did right with the Switch, being that you know, it's like, hey, having a second screen built into your console is great, making it, you know, optionally handheld. But you should not, you know, you don't need to do a bunch of crazy stuff with that screen.
No.
Yeah. So I've been enjoying that. Got some Mario in my life. It's a good like podcast game, mm-hmm. of all things. Like there's not a lot of important audio stuff going on there.
Yeah. You're not doing a lot of reading.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I've been playing it when I'm doing it on my own. And then, yeah, it continues to be a source of relationship destroying fun. Oh, we you know, Jen and I will do a date night. That's just kind of a couch date a couple times a week. And I came to her and I was like, so there's something I want to bring back into our marriage that we haven't done for a while, but I think we're up for it. Will you play Mario with me?
we must retest our union.
yes we pass, we will diminish and go into the east or whatever it is. So that's been a lot of fun. And then I also played, well, any other questions about that?
No
cool. I also got together for a game night and played a game called Plunder. and I've played it a couple times now. It is a pirate game.
Okay.
I have very little reference for Settlers of Catan, but in talking about it with the friends I was playing with, they're like, yeah, it's like a Catan where you can be openly aggressive towards the people you're playing with versus just kind of passively screwing them over.
Mm-hmm.
And funny enough, that makes for a way more relationally comfortable game.
Okay.
So funny, the theme of my game is testing in the games this week is testing relationships, I guess. But I, you know, in Catan, when you can kind of like cut someone off from resources or refuse to trade with them, or, you know, I think stick the robber on them, that sort of thing. But it, you know, it's all kind of that, you know, passive positioning, interaction. And that just causes a lot of fights. Like it feels like you play that game and you come away with a lot of ill will. however, in this game, you can just be like, yeah, I'm going to attack you. Or you could trade with me. But if you're not going to trade with me, I'll attack you.
Yeah.
And that just like that option and that kind of being built into the game of like, hey, it's just business. It's just piratey business. you know, it makes it, I don't know, just a lot more fun. Like it's a little bit more overtly competitive. The game is kind of built around that a little more. And so it's just, you know, a little more comfortable when you are screwing over your opponent.
Yeah.
So the game is, a grid, a big rectangle grid, and it's got a bunch of islands on it. Everybody starts with one pirate ship and one port, which is an island that is small enough to kind of be a starter island. And from there, you kind of go sailing the seas looking to take over other islands, destroy your competitor's ships. And then the big thing that makes the game interesting is find treasure. So there's a grid, like I said, and you have two spinners, one for like 1 through 10, and then one for A through, I don't know, it's like J, K, something like that. And so at the beginning of the game, you spin those each 3 times and put an X on those coordinates. And first person to reach that X gets a treasure card,
mm-hmm.
which has some random event in it. Usually it's getting additional resources for you. But sometimes it can be like extra movement. Sometimes it can be removing a life from someone. There's a bunch of like creative ways that these cards reward you, and even some that are negative for you. So there aren't enough negative cards to ever have you say like, I'm going to avoid an X. But there's always that tension of like, ooh, this might be bad. to, you know, going into it. It's but like anytime you... What's
the traps? That? It's like the traps in Gloomhaven.
Sure, yeah. So yeah, anytime you pick up an X, you immediately spin to place it again. And so this treasure is kind of popping up all over the world, and everyone's kind of racing in different directions to find it, or racing towards each other to find it, which is where, you know, conflict happens. You can trade with people if you're next to them, or if you're at you know, certain merchant ports, but you can also attack people. You just can't trade with and attack someone in the same turn,
okay.
If that makes sense. So that can be a very valuable thing. Like, you know, the bribery and extortion is rampant, where you kind of pull up and you're like, hey, how you doing? And they're like, I'm not great. I only have one life left on my ship. And it's like, yeah, I think you probably want to trade with me, right? I'm thinking you give me everything you have and I give you no attacks. Is that cool? Is that a good trade? Yeah. And you know,
it would be a shame if,
it'd be a shame if we didn't have a trade treaty with each other. Cause then I just have to attack you. I don't want to do that. Islands are constantly changing hands. You get victory points for every island and ship you have, although those can be taken and sunk. And then you can, if you earn enough gold, you can cash in gold for kind of permanent victory points, and everyone's racing to get to 10 points. So every time I've played, I've had 4 or more players, and it is a complete scramble, a ton of fun. There's always the kind of gang up mechanic where one person will jump out ahead and they're, you know, Their ship is an absolute monster. You can upgrade your ship with resources as well as by victory points. So, you know, they fully upgraded their ship, but they've got all this momentum, and everyone kind of bands together to take them down a notch. And then it's a scrum of you know, who can reemerge in front the fastest. Mm-hmm. So you never know exactly who's going to come out on top. It's highly random because of the way that the treasure X's just kind of pop up wherever. Mm-hmm. Like you could start the game feeling like you have the worst island that's like the most isolated, not near anything useful. And then two spins later, it drops the X right on top of you.
Nice.
Or more than once we've spun for a new X and it drops it right on somebody's ship. it's like, oh, well, that's nice. That's great. Or they've, I think the, we calculate there's a 0.4% chance. So a 0.5% chance that you collect treasure and then the new treasure shows up right on top of your ship where you just collected it. Oh. And you would get that treasure again. that has happened once in the games we've played. So
oh, wow.
It is. Yeah. It's hilarious. When the things kind of break your way in that form, combat is dice rolls, so you know it's just you roll 1d6, your opponent rolls 1d6, higher roll wins, tie goes to the attacker, so there's a reward for being the aggressor.
Oh, the opposite of risk. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you add a +1 to the roll for cannons on your ship, so you can upgrade your attack, or the bigger the island is, the more bonus it gets on these rolls. But it all stays very light, very zippy. The group I'm playing in, always read the treasure cards in pirate voice,
okay,
which made it infinitely better. Mm-hmm. This is you know, we, I think we're kind of getting to the point where it feels like we've seen the extent of what the game has to offer. Mm-hmm. So it's not a campaign game. There's not, you know, 600 hours of campaign play or whatever. But it is a really fun game.
No, it sounds like fun. Just the multiple options that you have to figure out how to jockey for advantage makes it sound interesting to me.
Yeah, it's a great, great friendly game to play when you've got a larger group too, because it plays up to six, and it's actually like really good at the top end player count. Whereas I feel like a lot of games will be like, you know, 4 to 8 players, but 8 players is a complete cluster.
Yeah. Mm. 8 players, this is going to be a nightmare and it'll last for hours and hours.
yes. Yeah. I'm sure Ben can list a couple of those games.
this sounds like a class of games where it's like, this is a game that I would make everybody like have a beer with when playing. Cause it's like, you want to turn off like your max min or min max brain and like just have fun and enjoy the theme.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with that. And I think the appropriate drink would be rum, given that is literally a resource in the game.
Of course, you know.
But yeah, so that's Plunder, and between those two, that's what I've been playing this week.
Sounds like fun.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, so we've all had those moments in games where you try something that is crazy or random. It kind of, you're like, oh, I think I see a way to break the game. And then you find out that not only did you not break the game, but the devs actually totally accounted for you trying that thing. And it leads to some crazy new mechanic or new area, whatever. So what games have the best, wait, that actually worked moments?
Let's see here. I'm going to get started. I'm going to edit this response a bit because you'll see. So Tom writes, is it too early to talk about Elden Ring? The game's secret levels are hidden like the gag in Police Squad. I don't know what that means. I think you're just an elevator, but you're actually the Underdark, but you're actually a lost city. And then I'm going to cut it here because that's as far as we've gotten.
Suffice to say, the places get more egregious and random as you go. And yes. There are probably, what, like 10 different Matryoshka doll locations popping off from
it's
each other.
Wild. So I'm going to go. go here and just say, I will never get over that respective quest line. Yeah, they're talking about one quest, which is basically you checking out what is down those elevators. And I think that that is like, yeah, they're designing it for you to go there. Like, it's content, it's a level, but all of Elden Ring kind of feels like if I push in this direction, I will crest over a hill and suddenly there is something, you know, kind of brand new. I think the expansiveness and generosity of it is a huge part of the appeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do that very well.
Yeah. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, back when I bought Fallout 1 and 2 in a Walmart bundle in college, this would have been around 1997, I didn't know much about the series, and as a lark, when decided to do a second playthrough, I was curious to see what would happen if I generated a character with intelligence of only one. You can imagine my surprise to find out that not only was a viable way to play the game, but the developers took into account and created a dumb-as-a-box-of-rocks playthrough for the game.
Nice.
Yeah, isn't it like your responses change, or like even the things people say to you change?
Oh yeah, like you can't speak your multisyllabic dialogue. Words.
Yeah.
And there are some people who, you know, you would not be able to outsmart them, you know, or like talk your way around them, where if you're playing as a low int person, they just do not know how to deal with you and they lose their patience and give you whatever you want. Yeah.
That's pretty fantastic.
That is neat. They tried to bring a little bit of that back in New Vegas, but it's hard to do with voiced dialogue, and that's what you trade away.
They brought some of it into Outer Worlds with the canonical ending of flying into the sun as being an idea you come up with.
A thing that I heard, like, just this is a while ago. Did you know, like, it's apparently harder to fly into the sun than it is to escape the solar system?
What?
Yeah, there's some kind of countervailing force due to like solar winds or something like that, to where it would take more energy to make it to make it even to the surface of the sun than it would to escape the solar system.
And I wonder with like the escape, it's like they're including like zipping around things like they did with like Voyager. So
yeah, I don't know. Okay. I don't know an awful lot of details, but for some reason you mentioning that just brought that up as a factoid. Let's see, Jala, what does David say?
David says, Mass Effect 2. After getting Legion at the end of my first playthrough, I just had to get him/it, or they, earlier on my second playthrough before Tali's missions and bring him with me. Yeah, I lost the entire crew from my ship, but the extra dialogue was worth it.
Yeah, Legion and Tali are oil and water for understandable reasons. Oh gosh, man, it's been too long since I played those games. Let's see, Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
He says, using the ballista in the pursuer fight in Dark Souls 2 had to be quick. Also learning to parry properly in Dark Souls 1 and destroy Gwyn in 15 seconds. Best feeling ever.
Yeah, very little in the game actually rewards you for parrying it outside of PvP, and then all of a sudden this very poorly tutorialized mechanic is the key to beating the final boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the ballistas are great because, you know, I think there's several moments in those games where it's like, okay, this trap keeps on being used on me, and now the tables have turned. I get to turn the turret around on the bad guys.
Yeah, it's a great way to take out that boss, especially if you're trying to beat it early.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good boss. Let's see, this would be me. Eli says, that magical moment in Dishonored 1, I can stop time and possess people, hell yeah, badass. But could I? No, that's ridiculous. But what the heck, let's try it anyway. Chef fingers. Then they continue. If it's not entirely clear, I'm referring to the practice of freezing time right when a guard fires their gun, then possessing them and walking in front of their own midair bullet, leaving their body and waiting for time to unfreeze. It's the perfect crime.
Yes.
Oh God. And Ben, round us out with what Rookie says.
Ricky says, in Infernax, there's a screen that's identical to the infamous kneel for 5 seconds to summon a tornado screen from Castlevania 2. So naturally, I knelt in the appropriate spot for 5 seconds. Imagine my surprise when Alcidor carried off a screen by a tornado. This was followed by texts wondering how Alcidor knew the ancient tornado summoning techniques, then lamenting that no one will ever find out since he was torn apart by a freak tornado. Game over.
Oh, that's pretty good. I'm really curious about Infernax. I have been ever since David brought it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a complete love letter to the Castlevania games.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is cool, but I also, you know, never played the original Castlevania games, so I got to do my homework before I get the most out of Infernax.
Yeah, the collections, you know, the collection usually goes on sale.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Let's see. I guess we can do ours. This is hard, but I think since David isn't here, I can just give the Uber example that I'm real surprised people didn't, which is the Stanley Parable.
Yeah, that is a game about these kinds of moments.
Yeah, well, which, you know, it's all about, you know, initially it's like, okay, you can follow the narration or you can decide to explicitly disobey it, but like finding all of the opportunities in between and seeing how wildly things can diverge just by, you know, basically like if it is possible, you know, that you think, okay, I'm going to get out of the bounds of the box. And then you realize, no, I'm just in a bigger box that the developer designed for me. I thought I escaped, but I literally just went right into it, right back into their hands.
I want the Stanley Parable as a continuous deployment game where like the people never stop working on it and patching in new content. And they just keep on following different threads of ways you could break the game to the point that it's like, literally you could spend hours and hours just, pushing on stuff and getting to wildly different broken endings, we'll say.
I would love that because I have fallen out of the geometry of a game in multiple instances and reported about that on this show. Yeah. It is my MO to start pushing the bounds of any game that I am playing.
I would love it just to see David get continuously triggered.
just ripping his own head off and throwing it at the screen to hopefully knock it over.
And Stanley ripped off his head and threw it at the screen.
No. you mentioned an update, and I have to say this, the studio that is doing the Stanley Parable like Ultra Deluxe Edition update or what have you, Crows, the studio designed by created by one of the developers, tweeted just a couple of days ago, no, yesterday, saying, "We are updating the Stanley Parable for a new generation of players, swapping all of the narrator dialogue with the TikTok text to speech voice." Nice. Oh my gosh.
Oh, Lord.
And then they say, the TikTok thing is a joke, unless, so who knows? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I am only free to do this because David is not here, so nobody tell him.
Yeah, nobody tell David that the Stanley Parable is getting re-released.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I think this successfully answers the question, but I'm going to go with Baba's you and that the game allows you to crash the game by creating too many things. So I'm pretty sure the devs were okay with that, but yeah, it does break the game. So it's whether or not that works, I'm not sure. Maybe that's open for debate.
No, well, no. I'm now curious, how many things is too many things?
So you can get into a system where whenever you move, you spawn a new object, and it's a thing where it's like you can increase it. Like first you spawn one, then you'll spawn two, then you'll spawn four, that sort of thing. And so by the time you move, like, I don't know, 10 or 12 times, like first you get the entire screen filled with it, and then, yeah, then the game is over. So,
oh man,
it's nice when a game over screen is a Windows alert that the program is crashed. Yeah.
It is the smell of smoke and ozone as your computer melts down to slag. Jala, how about you?
So I actually can't say that I've really had one of those because, again, I like to push the barriers of the game all the time, and I have very frequently fallen out of the geometry of any given game that I am playing. So I have a couple of examples where I was disappointed because I couldn't do something.
Okay.
So one of those would be in Half-Life, I guess Half-Life 2. I don't know. I don't remember. Anyway, where you've got those weird little barnacle looking thingamits, and I wanted to, like, there was a bleach bottle nearby, and I was very upset that I could not pour bleach in its mouth and kill it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to kill it by feeding it bleach because it's a terrible pustule.
Mm-hmm.
But that did not work. And then also in Dishonored, in the space whale that was in the whale oil factory, I really wanted to release the beast and let it, like, murder all of the guards.
Okay.
That would have been amazing. And they didn't. That was a missed opportunity right there.
Yeah.
Free Willy okay, has that's gotten just, fucked up.
Right? I mean, like, that's what I wanted to have happen. I wanted that whale to get justice, you know?
Or at least to create an unignorable Epic. Distraction. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Do my work for me. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine actually, Jala, I would chalk up to you for me finding it. So no surprise there. But the jumping puzzles in Guild Wars 2, we mentioned those a couple weeks ago, are just a parade of like, wait, could you get there? Or wait, could you stand on that geometry? No, you couldn't jump over that. Why? Wait, okay, now and just like following that rabbit hole all the way through for, I mean, hours sometimes it goes on.
And you know that there were some pioneering adventuring people that were in the game that decided to go look for these and figure them out the first time. And then like it, you know, and then it just got spread from there. But like somebody was the first person to go to each of these random, some of them are way out of the way too.
Yeah.
And you're like, so I have to stand on this one pixel. There's a one very specific pixel that you can stand on. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one definitely scratches that itch for me.
Nice. Well, that good question. Good answers. Good all around. Thank you, Dennis, for posting that. And thank you, everybody, for responding. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are exciting. Things are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Jala, what's happening? Okay. I was about to ask, is this one of the better days in a while because of the Sega thing? But then I realized that's not your favorite Shining Force, is it?
It's not my favorite Shining Force, but it's a Shining Force.
Okay.
And it's a good I like the first three Shining Forces. I like them all.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that I probably played the least out of the first three.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. It's not that it's a bad game at all. It's a very good game, but it's just not the one that I played a bunch. Anyway, Shining Force 2 and Sonic Spinball and Space Harrier 2 are all now on Switch's online game collection. The downside is that they are on the online game collection via the expansion pack tier, which is $40 or $50 per year per person. But if you have more than one person in the house with a Switch, you can subscribe with a family membership for a discounted rate. That's not bad because it gives you N64 and Sega games. And if you don't want to, everybody is like sitting there screaming right now, you can emulate it. Yes, I know I can emulate it, but it's very convenient to have it on my little Switch and be able to play it wherever. And they have like a sale going right at the moment. So Dave and I just combined, we had individual memberships and we combined them. So, you know, we got a discount from that and I had points and stuff for playing a bunch of Fire Emblem Heroes. And so I actually ended up coming out pretty, you know, nice and easy on that. But I went ahead and subscribed to that thing. I have not loaded it up yet. I only have just so much time in my life right now, but it will be there for me when I do. And then you get to hear me talk about not Fire Emblem, but another strategy RPG. Whenever I get to that one.
From right around the same time too. Yeah. Nice. Now that'll be a nice warm nostalgia blanket. And when you get tired of that, you can switch the channel over to the just zenith of game design excellence, Sonic Spinball.
Oh yeah.
Wow. It just said all of the Switch Online stuff. They just released the most random, weird
I know,
bullshit. Oh, man.
I'm waiting for Bubble Bobble, but they'll never release the original Bubble Bobble.
It's insulting that that they don't have Super Mario RPG on there yet. Like, I'm not...
Yeah.
You know, oh, like, wow. I just... Every once in a while, I'm like, oh, I could do to play, like, the opening half hour of Super Mario RPG. It's, like, a cute game. Uh-huh. I like the music or whatever. Nope, not on there. This happens to me a couple times a week. I think, I want to fire up this game. It doesn't happen. And then, yeah. then 2 days later, I think, hey, I'm going to fire this up, and that doesn't happen. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Related to Sega stuff, I'm going against my own goals for the segment because I'm not necessarily excited about this, but I think it's worth knowing. Dennis, a couple of weeks ago, you spoke the Sonic Origins collection into existence.
Yes.
Yeah. After you had gone
in the shittiest way possible, apparently.
Yeah. After you had gone to see Sonic 2, the Sonic movie, the second one. With your kids, you talked about wanting to play the originals and see where they wanted to play the game where Knuckles came from, right? And Sonic and Knuckles, not necessarily available, but it will be available through Sonic Origins, and pretty soon only through Sonic Origins. That is because Sega, because they're putting out this $40 collection of Sonic 1, 2, 3, and Sonic CD. They're going to be pulling the original versions. They're going to be pulling basically any pre-existing versions of the original Sonic games from digital storefronts, delisting rather. So if you already purchased them, you'll be able to redeem and download them, at least, you know, for a while, as long as that is honored. But Sega is again trying to kind of force people down the road into playing this. Sonic 2 will stay on the Sega Genesis Switch Online portion of the expansion pack or whatever. They're going to be taking taking those previous editions down, including some pretty good ports, honestly, like the Sega Age. I forget the name of the collection, but they had done some really good ports here recently, and to see that those are not going to be around as we gamble on these new ports is a bit of a bummer. And again, you can emulate it, yes, I know, but unless you have an emulator handheld, you're going to be relying on officially available, you know, stuff on the Switch or what have you. And yeah, there's a possibility that Sonic Origins is going to screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I wonder, you know, like, for accessibility reasons, yeah, it always sucks when they're taking stuff down. I'd be curious to see the stats on, like, how many new purchases of those games that they're taking down there were per week, per whatever unit of time. Because, you know, if it slowed to a complete drizzle or, like, no one was actually downloading it, I get it. But I imagine that it still has some kind of velocity on it.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no insight into those stats. I just think it's to me, it's a matter of principle, damn it. But who knows? oh God, this story. Hey, Dennis, what's happening in the world of disinformation?
Speaking of principles, Pinnacle of Virtue, Russia, has some interesting disinformation campaigns going on, and kind of showed their whole ass in a very funny way. You know, funny in relative terms for a country that about is aggressively... Yeah.
Yeah. Also, about as funny as pictures of Nazi memorabilia and crystal meth can be.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Trump throwing rolls of Bounty paper towels at people.
Yeah. Funny. Pretty grim.
also an interesting examination into language and translation, and also just kind of idiots. Russia posted a supposed bust of Ukrainian Nazis with all this ammo and improvised explosive devices, crystal meth, like you said. And then some more interesting stuff that starts calling into question the authenticity of this bust. You know how Nazi fan or, you know, Nazis do, there's just a picture, like a 4x6 picture of Hitler taped to a speaker.
Yep. Yeah.
Just, you know, just tape your, you know, like you have, you know, the picture of Jesus on your dashboard or whatever, for if you're Catholic, they got Hitler on a speaker. Yeah,
they've got the Totenkopf patch, not mm-hmm. on like a garment or anything, just down on the bottom of the speaker, you know, the death
set. Just there. Yeah. And you know, the screen printed just a red shirt with a swastika on it.
Yeah. You know, screen printed with the factory crease still on it. Yeah. Yeah.
And I some people might be confused. It's kind of in Nazi circles, the swastika is actually like a sign of that movement. So super subtle. And then most notably, and tying it back to video games, several copies of The Sims 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes no fucking sense until you think SIM card. So whatever poor Russian cop got stuck with setting up this fake bust was probably told at some point, this is the most popular theory, told at some point, hey, make sure some Sims are in the picture.
Yeah, get three Sims.
Get three Sims. So they bought The Sims 3 and put it in this fucking picture.
Yeah.
So, I guess we can take some small solace in knowing that there are several dumb Russians out there that we might be able to
dumb operatives for the Russian government, let's say.
The specificity on that front is probably important.
Yeah.
That is a very funny in, like I said, in relative terms, in a situation that is very not funny. I think it shows just how much, you know, I guess confirmation bias is what it is, can get people to accept stupid things. Cause you know, there's people, you know, who want to believe that Russia's in the right for whatever reason, that are going to look at these images and completely buy it. Like, oh my God, these people, you know, printed out pictures of Hitler just to hang around their apartment. They're so bad. Instead of seeing it for what it is, which is just crazy.
Then it gets back to, this is actually counter propaganda, and these are clues being, you know, being put out there about what's really happening. Yeah, no, it's
and then suddenly, you know, The Sims becomes an alt-right haven for reasons that we cannot understand because they do not make logical sense.
I mean, people,
just kidding. The Sims is not an alt-right haven. Don't worry about that.
No, I mean, the Sims is fun. And so people can enjoy playing The Sims if they want. Mm-hmm. People like playing fun games,
especially Nazis, apparently.
including, God. Oh,
good Lord.
God, what a nightmare. At least if they're going to be monsters, at least they can be incompetent.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Why those two things? It is a strange blessing that those two things go together so frequently.
That continues to be incredibly bleak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that one of us brought this. I'm happy that you brought this because that this happened at a time when I wasn't taking notes about stuff. So it crossed my Twitter timeline, then it went away. So
yes.
And Ben, I really don't know how to segue to yours. What's up?
Yep. Well, I'll segue. And since things are looking bleak, here's like a ray of sunshine to end out the show with.
Aww.
It's something I discovered this past week, similar to the game I talked about. It's very old and it's not really relevant. But I found out that Polygon hosted a stream 4 years ago where they intercutted lo-fi hip-hop beats to study to with Waluigi clips, and it's for 12 hours long. So we were listening to this while playing Terraria, and every time, like, you forget that it's like, oh, this is just like a lo-fi hip-hop channel, Waluigi will come in and just make your day that much better.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
What is on Waluigi's test? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's, I think, Waluigi Ethics is somewhere in there. It's a book on cheating in the foreground. Yeah, Wa Ethics is one of them.
That's every question is just Wah! A, Wah! B, Wah! C, Wah! D.
And then it's just Wah! And then just an essay question. You are gonna lose? And it's open-ended. Please write a three-paragraph essay.
Yeah.
And it seems bespoke enough where it's like, I don't know, I don't think they did it programmatically. I think some poor soul like went in and edited this and made this 12-hour long video. So,
but like, does unique stuff? I'm scrubbing through real quick, and it looks like it's a pretty small loop of just his head moving slightly.
I'm not talking about the animation.
Oh,
I'm talking about
like
the sound bites.
The audio, yeah.
Oh, he's cut into the audio.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no. So you'll be listening to the, you know, to the tape loop beats and whatnot. And
you'll get a wall of drop, dude.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I clicked on the link and it popped open extremely loud on my headset. So while I was trying to get that volume down is when you must have specified how Waluigi is involved in this. That is excellent.
Yeah. No, this is good. You know, I've started, okay. you used to joke about the lo-fi hip hop to study to kind of stuff. That stuff is actually fun to put on in the background as you're doing other things. If you're tired of listening to the same Godspeed You Black Emperor albums, you know, like I sometimes get to be.
As we all do.
Yeah. Putting those on, or there's like a Square has put out like lo-fi chill versions of like the just Final Fantasy music and stuff. It's all dorky shit. It's an aesthetic I'm down for.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Waluigi can only sweeten the pot.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. Cool. Well, that sounds like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel buttons.
Yeah, there we go. The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this week's level number 412. Hey, Greta. Greta's giving me some ankle time. She knows the show's about to end. just a reminder, because we can never say it enough. Well, yes, thank you. Thank you for your support. People who listen to the early release feed on Patreon, the show doesn't necessarily come out terribly early or early at all, just because of the way it's edited, put together. We don't really record it with a huge lead time, but this is posted on there. If you've been getting the show from that feed, the early release feed is going away because we're replacing that perk with other stuff on the Patreon. I'll post an update both on the Patreon and on this feed with where you can go to get a new kind of combined feed with everything on it if you so choose. So that part isn't going away. It's just the early part of it. So do not despair. We've got you taken care of. But otherwise you can do all the usual stuff. Tell your friends, ratings or reviews in whatever podcast directory you choose. Jala, where can people find your new show?
Jalachan.com.
Yeah. Jala's place. Jala Chan's place.
You missed the chance to do Jalachan.place.
I think we joked about that when Jala mentioned it last week when we were off the air.
Still good. Had to get that one on air.
There's no dot place TLD, and it would take hundreds of thousands of dollars to make one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So better start the Patreon now. I've been Cole. You can I'm not gonna do Twitter because fuck that. You can watch my streams on twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
I've been Dennis Furia, and there are no safe corners on the internet to find me. You can find me in the Duckfeed Slack, which is still an amazing place. And yeah, just at me. I'm always happy to chat in the Duckfeed Slack. A wonderful place.
I'm also Jalachan in places. Anywhere you can find me there.
Yeah. And Ben.
And I was worried that you were going to cut me off there, Cole.
No.
I've been Ben.
And stick around for some titles. I only wrote down one, and it was my own. I'm sorry if that's lame, but I just I didn't hear an awful custardy battle.
On mine as well.
Okay,
I think that's pretty much. Unless somebody's got a real good one, I think that should be it. The other one I've got is pillow policy, but that's not nearly as good.
Yeah,
that's just alliteration.
Dennis, what you got?
The only other one I had was Whale Justice.
Whale Justice. All right. And Ben, you got anything?
I just had one. I had Jalachan in place.
That's been me all of today, planted in this chair.
Oh God, miserable. Oh, cool. Yeah, let's do custody battle. Let's yeah, rock it.
I like
do that. And let's go. So Jala can not be move in that chair. Yeah,
go lay down somewhere, which is move like 10 paces and lay out, fall over.
Hey, laying is different than sitting.
Yes, it is.
I will hear no argument.
Have a wonderful evening, all.
You too.
Yeah,
have
a good week, everybody. Out. See you guys around.
Bye.
See you guys.
See you.
Bye.